then I'm going to be filming again week after next.
Oh, really? Where at?
All around at the minute. So it's like I'm making, it's like a one-off show about ghosts, bitch. Yeah, like it's hilarious. They actually let me do it. So I like just went to the History Hit people and was like, could I make a medieval ghost show? And they were like, yeah, okay, whatever you want to do. And I was like, oh, sweet. All right.
They were like, no, that conflicts with our medieval ghost show.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they're letting me do it, which is very nice of them. So we're going to be going all over. So I think we're going to Bath. We might be going up to Northumberland for part of it. Like, we're doing all sorts of things. They're going to, I think at some point in time, they're legitimately making me stay in a haunted castle overnight.
Ooh,
which,
fun.
Which I'm all like extremely pleased about, where they're like, I mean, mostly we'll just give you wine and then you have to sit there and be like spooky, isn't it? And I'm like, all
normally,
right.
normally you would have to you would get your inheritance after you stayed in a spooky haunted house, but not this time.
Not this time. Yeah, I'm all like, do I get the castle? Because I'll take it, bitch. So yeah, that'll be fun. So yeah, just kind of like pulling together all the places that we're going to film and things of that nature at the moment. So that should be good. And then it's back to fucking school. So teaching again.
Oh, y'all haven't started back yet?
No, like the UK year starts in October. Really? So it's like all of the students are kind of like coming back now. But mm-hmm. we don't start teaching until October. It's like, you know, they're getting settled in, things of that nature. Like when I was out getting my falafel on my lunch break today, I noticed all the University of the Arts kids were back. And they were all being very adorable. It was like all these first years getting acquainted with the neighborhood. I was like, oh, look at them. They're all full of hope. And I just love it. I love it. I'm just such a sucker for uni kids, man. Love them. I love them, man. I'm like, they're all going to get so drunk tonight. Ugh, love it. Love it.
So many bad decisions in their future. So many.
I know, and I love that for them. I think, you know, it's very precious. We need to, like, you know, allow for that. So, yeah, it'll be good. But, yeah. Yeah, so a lot going on. It's, you know, it's the most wonderful time of the year if you're an educator. you know, it's like, I'm not burnt out. I'm ready to teach again, you know, all these things. By March, I'll be like, just fucking kill me. Why do I do this? But, like, for now, I'm quite happy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Same every year.
Yep. Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, just that's... like, you're just sitting here thinking about how stoned you were as an undergraduate. And you know what? You're right to do it.
No, I'm thinking about like if I had to go back to school right now, like
Yeah, I don't know how people like with kids do it and stuff. You know, it's did you ever see the musical Avenue Q? Here's a deep dive.
No, but I know of it.
Yeah, you know that it's got the important song "The Internet Is for Porn" in it. But it's got this, like, one sad song about how, like, a bunch of them want to go back to college and, like, and it's all about, like, how nice it was being in college and why can't you do that again? And then, like, the end of it is, like, but if I were to go back to college, think what a loser I'd be. And it's like, yeah, you'd just be, like, a weird, creepy loser and it would be not good. So, like, I still think I'm young, but I'm, like, obviously not. Like, no. clearly not.
Not
so.
For college. Yeah.
No. So, like, I used to be all like, oh, well, teaching uni keeps you young because, you know, like, you're in touch with things that are going on. It's like, yeah, like, I'm in touch with things that are going on, but I don't really, you know, like, it's not like my, you know, I just, I'm a kind of an old person looking at it, not someone who's experiencing it, and it's not the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get the LAN parties and one night stands and alcohol, like insane alcoholism and everything like that. It's just not the same.
Yeah, although the kids these days, like a lot of it, one of the things that I've been noticing is at least here, the kids are starting to drink less. It's like an old people thing to drink. And I'm all like, right, you are. I am quite drunk.
They're like, yeah, it's drugs all the way. Give me pills. Mm-hmm. Shit.
Yeah, they're all on some
and
shit.
Coke.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the very open and and like cavalier use of cocaine is very funny to me as someone who grew up in like the, you know, the Dare and all that kind of shit era. And it's like, you know, that was like supposed to be so scary. And I only knew like people who did that. Like I, there were a couple people in high school who I'm sure did, but like I didn't, you know, I wasn't in on that. And then, like, in college, you know, there's a few more people. And now it's just like, yeah, it's what everyone... And, like, when I went back to law school, it was way more common then. But, like, now, it's just like, oh, yeah, like, coke. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like, completely. Because I remember, like, even still in uni, being quite freaked out by coke use. Being like, oh, you know, like, a fucking Nancy Reagan got my ass. Like, thanks, Dare, or whatever. It's like, all other drugs, I was like, oh, fine. But, like, coke, I'd be like... crack, it was sort of like in there with like crack, meth, and heroin. Whereas like, no, those are probably like, that's not gonna happen. But yeah, like in London, it's pretty much endemic. It's really wild how common coke is in London. And it is interesting that kind of like, but I suppose you do, it always was kind of like the rich kids thing, so I guess it makes sense that it's kind of like effectively decriminalized, right?
Like... yeah, and they're just like it, like, you know, I grew up with like Dare and all that shit, and as you said, Nancy Reagan, and there was like, I've always been like, you know, drugs, whatever, like, do whatever you want, I don't really care as long as you're safe. But like, I don't think I could ever bring myself to try coke, like, because there was a story back in like, I think it was the late 80s, there was a basketball player named Lynn Bias. He was a college basketball player and he was really good, and he got drafted like number 3 overall, I think, in the NBA draft by the Celtics. And then like a few days after the draft, he died. Basically his heart exploded, and it happened like right after he did coke. And so like they took, like, the media and like interest groups and everything took that story, and they were like, yeah, that like he did, like, he did coke once and it destroyed his heart, and he was like a healthy athlete. And I was like, oh shit, I can never do it. Like, and still to this day, I think about it every time. It's like, it's not going to happen. It doesn't happen. But like, if I do this, my heart's going to explode. And later it came out that like Lynn Bias had like an unknown heart condition that caused the problem in the first place. And that's what caused him to die from doing coke, not, you know, not just doing coke once. But still, I was like, I can't do this shit.
Yeah. Yeah, scared. For sure. Yeah. And it's like that. It's interesting, right? The things that you do kind of see reported in the way that it goes down. But yeah, like, it's incredibly a thing here. I'm just kind of like anti-coke action, because I think that it's the drug that you take to make yourself worse. Like, you know, like, I've never, like, all the people that I've ever known who are like really quite into coke, it's like they're just quite dull. And and then they take coke and they're convinced that they're interesting. And boy howdy, let me tell you that in my experience, they are not. So, you know.
Like, yeah, here, I think, yeah.
This has been Old that's... People Corner with Luke and Eleanor.
I think, like, a lot of people do that with, like, alcohol. They're like, oh, alcohol makes me interesting. It's like, no, it just makes you surly.
Yeah,
Which is fine. Surly is fine. You know, but it's not, like, none of it makes you interesting. Doing drugs doesn't make you interesting. Like, you know, like, it might seem cool in some ways, but just like doing a drug, like, you know, everybody's like, oh, I smoke weed and they turn it into a whole personality. I'm like, just.
Yeah. Same.
It's not a personality. It's not a, like, you know, it's not a, I mean, I guess it is a lifestyle for some people, but I don't think it should be, like, you know, like, it helps you relax. It helps you have fun. Helps you get through the day. It takes the pain away. Whatever the, you know, whatever the reason is, it's, you know, just like with alcohol, cool, do whatever you want. But like, You know, that's not a personality trait. You're like, once it becomes a personality trait, like to me, you're getting towards like addiction and shit like that. And I'm just like,
I mean, it's an interesting one because it's a fine line, right? Because like here in the UK, basically, like our national pastime, and you know, myself included, is going pub in it. Like, you know, and certainly I do use alcohol. Like that's something that I definitely do, and that's it. And like, not only is that like culturally acceptable, it's really encouraged here. And I think it's really important to kind of like keep an eye on the fact that it is a drug. You know, yeah, and like, and it can be difficult. Although at the same time, like as I was saying, you know, I was kind of saying to people in Sweden, you know, like one of the differences is like our alcohol, our beers. Like if you drink ale, for example, which I do because I'm secretly a 60-year-old man. But if you drink a lot of ale, the thing about ale is that it's like a much lower percentage. So you're looking at kind of like 3.8, maybe 4.2, something like that. And so you can like really drink a lot of beer all night and like not necessarily be that drunk. And but even then, still, I was like saying to like the Swedish people, I was like, you know, and so if you stick to the 3.8, like, you know, it's fine. If you have 7 pints, that's fine. And they were all like, what? And I was like, what? Some pints? What? You know, like that's like, I mean, like that's a big night, but like it's completely within the realm of possibility, you know, for your girl over here. And like also our pints are bigger. So that's like a whole thing. Anyway, yeah, I'm just saying. Booze, eh? Fucking love some booze, so I do.
I can't do that. I can't.
That's because you're a parent. You've been out of training.
Well, no, that's true, but I can't like I can't drink that much.
Yeah,
I
but
can't drink that much beer. Like, if I'm gonna drink beer, I'm gonna just find like the highest ABV thing I can because like beer just sits in my stomach and I'm just like, ugh. Like it makes me feel so sluggish. And so like, you know, it's one of those things where like I guess when I was younger, I could just drink as much. I could drink as much, you know, beer as I wanted, and I just wouldn't feel that bad. And now I'm like, oh. A beer. I feel like I feel like I've eaten like 2 bowls of oatmeal, and now I need to sit down for a while. Like, not you know, not the, you know, not there's anything wrong with beer. It's just like I'm just oh so old now.
Yeah,
Like,
like
oh.
it's interesting because it is like one of those things where it definitely does catch up with you in your old age. But you know, like yeah, what are you gonna do, right? Like it's all part of a rich tapestry. So.
Yep, there you go. It is. It's part of the rich tapestry of drinking or getting high to alleviate the otherwise ever-present pains of the world. You ready to get started?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
All
Fucking
right.
love this for us.
Let's do it. 3, 2, 1. Hello, and welcome back to We're Not So Different, a podcast about how we've always been idiots. My name is Luke. I am an amateurish historian. As always, I'm joined by Dr. Eleanor Yanega, who is anything but. Today, we are going to talk a little bit more about video games again, but before we get there, as always, we have a question from one of our patrons, this time from I Would Whack 500 Moles, who says or asks, how did people in the Middle Ages celebrate their birthday? Was it wrapped up in patron saint celebrations? What would the presents have looked like? And was there cake?
Yeah, good question. You've kind of hit the nail on the head because the answer is no. Like, yeah, they don't celebrate birthdays, but what they did celebrate were name days. So you would celebrate the day with the name of a saint that you were named after. If indeed there was one. So that's kind of a thing. We don't have like super big records on what that all entails. Like, you might have like a nicer, like, yeah, I mean, there might be cake, such as it was, you know, that sort of thing, or like a nicer meal. And like, probably there were toys, you know, presents and things of this nature. Mm-hmm. But we don't have great documentation on it, to be honest. We do know, though, that it certainly was celebrated. And this kind of remains the norm, largely across Europe up until, I think, sort of like into the 18th century, when it kind of like transfers to birthdays. But, you know, you gotta also like keep in mind that a lot of people don't fucking know what day it is. Right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
Like real talk. I'm like, I'm not making that up, you know? Yeah. So, you know, which is why a lot of the time, you know, even with famous people in the medieval period, we're like, we think this person was born in this year. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, and we're better at knowing when they died than we are at knowing when they were born. And they were too, right? Because it's just kind of like all much of a muchness. It's kind of muddled together. But they do have a really clear understanding of the liturgical year.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's really different. So it's like, they fucking know when Easter is. Don't worry about that, right? So it's like, you know, people like monks or magistrates or really high up people, they've got an idea of what the date is, but your average peasant does not. But they will kind of know what Sunday it is, in, you know, Calends or whatever, you know? So they know that kind of part of the year. So if you just do it via saints' days, then you're going to be fine. Mm. And like that. So it's a quite a practical way of doing it when you think about it.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I guess this may be a weird question, but did they know that like stuff was coming up, I guess, by like the changing of the seasons, but they just didn't know how close it was because like,
yeah, you know,
like they didn't keep track of the year. I guess they didn't really keep track of calendars like we do now.
They keep track of the moon real closely. Yeah. So, like, knowing kind of, like, what phase of the moon it is and, like, knowing that there's kind of, like, roughly 12 of them in a year lets you kind of know what a month is, right? And that's also important because, for example, that's how you work out when Easter is by phases of the moon, because it's a movable feast, right?
Yeah.
So you have to pay attention to things like that. So paying attention to the moon is a big pastime for medieval people, and they really do. So they kind of know if it's like March or whatever, and so they can string these things together. Like, I'm not saying that they're like completely out of it, but more of the point is that, you know, you'll match the moon and you're like, oh, well, probably, huh, I wonder when Easter is this year. It's probably March or it's probably April, you know, based on that. You know, you're going to know when Passover is, okay, you know, things like this. So it's like, if it's Michaelmas, it's September, things like that, you know. So you have all these really big feast days that are a huge part of their year because, you know, as we've talked about before, like they're really celebrating, right? Those things. So it's just kind of part of that. So, you know, and especially, I guess this is true, like just circling back to birthdays and name days and that sort of thing. You know, for example, if your name is Michael, then your name also coincides with like one of the biggest feasts of the year. So you're like, wait, like it's about to go off for Michaelmas, right? Like, that'll be good. You know, so there are people who are going to have, like, a real interest in these things because, you know, medieval people do like to party. Kind of, like, rolling name days in with an established celebration is also kind of, like, a smart way of, like, making sure there's, you know, like, time to celebrate it. So it's like, you know, because a lot of those feast days are days off, like, you've also got, like, less work to do. Still got work.
Yeah.
Obviously. Like, someone's still going to have to milk the cow, but, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you might get a small cake.
Yeah. Yeah, probably, yeah, yeah. Probably a small cake. It's probably going to have currants in it. I'm just saying.
Ugh. No, never mind. I don't want to celebrate my birthday anymore.
Yeah. So are you, like, anti-raisin action?
I don't like raisins that much. They're not great.
Okay, all right.
Not my favorite.
I don't want to see. I'm kind of, like, pro-raisin. Like, I'm not, you know, like, it's not, like, my number one thing. I'm not, like, ride or die. But I like raisin, Devez and Quando. You know.
Well.
Yeah, there you go.
To each their own, you know. That's the thing.
Fine,
I guess I do kind of like Raisin Bran cereal.
I was about to be like, what about Raisin Bran? I love Raisin Bran. We don't get that over here. Also, Special K is different here, and I don't like it.
Do y'all get any of the same cereal?
Yeah, like we do. Okay. But, you know, obviously we get a lot less of the sugar ones. So, for example, we can't a cereal I like is Life, and you can't get Life. I fucking love a bowl of Life, so I do. Yeah, like American Special K is way better. I think that actually American Special K is a god tier cereal. Like, it snaps more than Rice Krispies. It's really, really good. But the one here is like wheat based, and it blows. We don't have Chex.
I do like chicks.
Yeah, I like Rice Chex in particular. Yeah, so things of
Me
this
too.
nature, right?
Yeah.
But here we've got Shreddies, and they're pretty good.
Shreddies.
Shreddies are kind of like akin to Life, but they're not. Like, I'll just put it that way. I don't know.
That's a good name for it. I like Shreddies.
Yeah, they're
That's
good.
great.
They're kind of like malted, I think. So yeah, like I like a Shreddies, but I don't really eat cereal anymore because I don't know. I guess I learned about carbohydrates or something. Shouldn't have done that,
Yeah. We got plenty of cereal. You know, kids have to eat the Cheerios.
Mate, like, dude, the way I ate cereal when I was a kid, it was just like it was just kind of. I don't know how my parents had four of us, because we were. It was just like having a swarm of locusts in the house at all times. It was disgusting, but there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's the joys of having children. So, if you would like to ask us questions like that,
That will end up in a reverie about cereal.
Yep. Then please do subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/WNSDpod. Just released our third episode on the Silmarillion. Yeah, and we will have more coming up soon. There's 24 episodes now, so you can listen to all that and check us out there. But anyway, on with the main show. So last time we did some talking about medievalism in video games because Eleanor is doing a presentation about Crusader Kings 3 at PDX Con in Stockholm. There was talk of Crusader Kings, of course, but also Age of Empires, Total War, and Civilization series. We laughed, we cried. Truly a good time was had by all. This week, we're still talking about medievalism in video games, but we're moving away from the spreadsheet games and into the real action. Well, real video game action, anyway. But seriously, enough of that nerd shit. It's time to talk about your action adventure games, action role-playing games, and even stealth action as well. We'll run through these games to see if there's anything to be learned from the medievalist concepts we find, or if it's just an excuse to do magic and slay dragons. Either way, it'll be fun. But first, Eleanor, how was the conference?
Yeah, I was fucking whipped, man. I had mead. Yeah, it was good. It was really fun. There was all kind of like the sort of hokey shit that I go in for, especially on the last day. They had like a medieval band. They had like a dude who did a sleight of hand magician stuff, which I'm like a child for. I fucking love that shit. So that went hard. There was like sword fighting. Yes, loved that for me. And I lose my shit when there's a medieval bagpipe. So that was great. And it was quite interesting. Like, it's weird. It's fun for me. Like, someone who sits around being an expert, not to toot my own horn all day about something. It was really fun to hang out with a bunch of people who were like serious experts in a field that I have no fucking idea about, right? And so, like, I learned a lot of stuff, which was really, really cool. And it was neat just kind of like hanging out with a bunch of people who are quite excited about medieval stuff, right? Like, so it was really funny. Like, after the talk I gave, I was talking to a bunch of nice people afterwards, and they were like asking me additional kind of like medieval questions about things. And like, we were sitting there, for 20 minutes or so, and then one of them very kindly was like, "Is it all right to keep asking you questions? Or you're not like tired talking about this?" And I'm like, "Are you fucking joking?" Like, my loved ones are like, "Shut up, Nora." Like, they're done hearing about medieval stuff all the time. So it's totally fine for me. Really, really. So it was nice to kind of like hang out with people like that and see new video games. And I'm now privy to information which I cannot, divulge at this point about
Top secret.
About like top secret things that may be occurring in the Crusader Kings world, which your girl may or may not be involved in. At this point. So, but there's some cool new things that are going to be coming out. Learned a lot about Victoria. So I'm gonna get like they gave me Victoria, so I'm gonna try playing that as well.
You're going to hate it. Absolutely hate it.
I want to stop capitalism.
It's just all early modern.
Yeah, so. I know, but like, what if I could stop capitalism?
That's true. What if? You can? I don't know if that's possible. I mean, I've never played Victoria, so
I don't fucking know. I don't know. So yeah, like, whomst be knowing? But yeah, so it's cool for me because I get to play a lot more things. So that's nice, right?
Yeah,
like good for me. It was definitely one of those things where I'm like, it's my job's kind of cool. Sometimes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. What was there a lute in the medieval band?
Yeah, hell yeah, there was a lute.
Nice.
Oh yeah, there was a lute. I was going crazy for the medieval band. They had the lute. They had like one of them little wooden, like, it's not quite a recorder, it's not quite a flute. They had one of those. Mm-hmm. It was all going on. I think there was a zither at one point.
Ooh.
No hurdy-gurdy. Love a hurdy-gurdy.
A hurdy-gurdy.
Yeah, but I've like I lost my shit for the medieval bagpipe. I was like, fuck yeah! So like that was really really fun.
Oh, that's awesome! Yeah, I've never even thought about old bagpipes. I'm just like, yeah, they've always looked like that.
That was really cool too. Like the Paradox people are really nice, and a lot of women, which I think is like worth noting. Like they are a video game company that really works really hard to get like women involved, and there's tons of women involved in like running the show and all these things. And I was like, that's cool as hell. And they were all really solid and fun to hang out with. So, I had a ball, basically. Maybe a little too much fun. You could say that.
Unlikely.
Yeah, oof. Mate, I'll tell you what. Saturday morning, I was feeling a little worse for the wear, but that's okay. It's all right. It's okay.
I've been hungover twice in my life that I know of. I have a severe immunity to it. I cannot... I don't...
All right, okay, weird flex.
I don't have a ton of flexes, but I just don't get hungover. It's like I'm not, I don't know why. I just don't do it. Like, I might wake up feeling some like sluggish or something, but not. it's been a long time since I was hungover. Like, that was like early drinking days. My sister can't either. Neither one of us really,
Wow.
Really retain that ability. Yeah. It's weird. Just
ability. It's not really a debility, mate. Ability. It's more like a curse, like, right? It's like,
well, not for me. I could drink as much as I want and I would never have to worry about feeling it in the morning.
I'm saying that like I thought you said that you never had the ability to have a hangover and I was like, what are you talking about? You have a superpower, you motherfucker.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I never
That's
yeah.
it. The
I don't
podcast
know,
but... is breaking up because I'm jealous of Luke. Like, that's
I would give it to you if I could. I don't drink almost any anymore, but you know, I would give it to you if I could, but unfortunately I can't divest that from myself. I didn't mean it as a flex, come on.
Jealous. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So that was my time. we should like get back to the show before I like reach to the screen and throttle you because I'm jealous. All right. Okay.
I didn't mean it like that. I was just talking. Mm. I can be trusted to riff. I can be trusted to do it. But you know, apparently not. Yeah. So we're gonna talk about these games, other medievalist type video games, and yeah, they're mostly, you know, RPGs, action games, stuff like that. And we're gonna start with one of the most well known, if only for the TV series that it spawned, but the Witcher series, which are third person action RPGs. RPGs are role-playing games, and third-person just means it's over the shoulder of the character, whereas first-person means that you just see it through the character's eyes, so like you'd only see your hands or whatever.
Yeah.
The Witcher series published by CD Projekt Red, and the most recent release is The Witcher 3 The Wild Hunt from 2015. So... yeah, Witcher is based on a long-running series of six medievalist fantasy novels by Polish author Eleanor. Can you help me with that first name?
A-N-D-R. Hold up. Yes. Sorry, I was bringing up my other notes.
No, you're
good. Yeah, like, it's Andrzej.
Andrzej, okay.
Yeah, Andrzej Sapkowski. Yeah.
Sapkowski, there you go. The Witcher games take place in fictional lands that are based heavily on Slavic mythology and meant to broadly resemble European cities and countryside in the Middle Ages. You take on the role of Geralt of Rivia, a hardy warrior with two swords, cat eyes, the ability to perform dorky magic tricks, and a love for busty wenches. Mm. Basically, witchers are just dirtbag Jedi with worse magic and more sex. So, yeah. Witchers are largely outcast who are looked down upon by society but are necessary to protect people against, you know, the orcs and werewolves and trolls and demons and evil witches and vampires and everything else. You know, and apart from these standard tropes and mythic monsters, the game is rife with medieval undertones as well, from the presence of bards and serfs to the importance of castles and dynastic lines. Popularity of the games and the books inspired the Netflix Witcher series, which stars Henry Cavill as Geralt. The Witcher 3, if you only know one thing about it, it might be that it was somewhat controversial because developers said they didn't include non-white characters in the game because it would have been very rare to see non-white people in medieval Poland. I'm not Polish, based on what Eleanor has told me, I think there would probably have been more than zero there.
This is a bugbear of mine, but we'll get to it in a second.
So here's
the thing about saying that, right, is that when you say, oh, there wouldn't have been people of color in this place, what you're doing is saying that your country is a backwater, which Poland was not. Okay, like Poland, you know, was a very well connected part of Europe. It was a very wealthy part of Europe. It was a very important part of Europe. The only reason that there wouldn't have been people of color who were kind of like around the joint would be like if you never had any trade. Like if your royal family was completely unimportant. Right? Like, if you are out in the countryside in, like, northern Norway, sure. Well, actually, even, like, maybe not even then, because Vikings do be getting around and there's all kinds of Vikings. I suppose if you're in, like, far north Scotland or something like that. Something of this nature. Yeah, sure. But even then, it wouldn't be, like, crazy. Like, people wouldn't lose their minds if they saw a person of color. They'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. You know? Like here they are. It's a really frustrating thing because in the first place, like what you're kind of saying is like, oh, well, medieval Poland sucks. It is a backwater without knowing it. Right. Like, so you're just saying, oh, this place sucks, man. They just couldn't get anyone in. Like just wouldn't happen. And also it's stupid because The Witcher is not set in Poland. It's set on the continent.
It's a fake place.
It's not real. It's not real. You could just put whoever you want there. It's not a real place. You could. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's really weird to. It's really weird to be like, you know, okay, we're gonna draw from like all of these settings, and then fall back and be like, oh, but you wouldn't have seen it in medieval Poland. Like, why fall back to Poland? Like,
yeah, because it's like because that that also kind of indicates that they know that like you would in a lot of places.
Yeah, right. And also, like, they fall back on it, you know, because CD Projekt Red is a Polish company. It obviously, The Witcher began as a Polish franchise, you know, under a Polish author. But it's just really weird to, like, fall back on that, especially because, like, Poland is near the Ottoman Empire. Like, there wouldn't have been any Turks
like,
there.
None at all?
I find that hard to believe. As Eleanor said, it's a silly excuse for a game. Like, you know, if you want to go for 100% authenticity, you know, like, which I think is kind of a fool's errand anyway. I don't think you can actually do that in video games or almost any fictional art, really. Like, you have to depart some ways from reality in order to do fiction on some level. But, it's just silly.
Yeah, I feel like it's silly, and yeah. It just kind of takes away from It's funny because for me, it's like the exact opposite of what they're saying. It's like it takes me out a little bit. If you've got a pure white video game, it takes me out of it a little bit because I'm like, for why? It's like it's distracting when it's only white people. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also like, A, you could easily like you could have easily like just inserted someone in there, you know, like change an NPC. An NPC is non-playable character, which is all the other characters that inhabit the world other than the player, usually. And you could just, you know, change their skin tone or something like that. You don't have to like because most of the NPCs don't talk. They're just in the background. They walk around. So like even if you just did that and you just changed a few like that, you don't even if you're just throwing it in there, you still don't have to answer the question anymore, and you don't have to say dumb things and like fall back on that, because the only reason you fall back on something like, oh, they didn't have any medieval Poland, is when you're like, fuck. We just didn't include, like, I don't know. It's silly, like, you know, but yeah, it's silly. But yeah, speaking of, you've watched The Witcher TV series, right? Do you like that? I haven't gotten around to it yet.
I find it very confusing.
Yeah, I bet.
It's like and it's I kind of need to go back and rewatch it all because when I started watching it, I didn't quite understand. Like the first series is not like all the timelines are different, and that was not clear to me. And I was like, "What's going on?"
I saw that they admitted that they shouldn't have done it like that in the first season because they were like, "Yeah, we're going to bounce around the timeline, but we're not going to tell you." And it's like, they don't even do that in Star Wars. So why would you do it in like a franchise with much less name value?
Yeah, totally. Where it's like, how do I know about all of this? And it's like, sorry, I've not read the books. And
Or played
like,
the games.
or,
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
like, so how am I supposed to know what's going on here? I think it's very pretty. I think that Henry Cavill is most attractive when he's being a silly little elf boy. That's good.
Yeah, he's funny. He's fun.
He's good. I like, but I think my favorite episode is the one with like the kind of princess monster situation. And like I was kind of hoping that it would be a bit more like hunting monsters and a little bit less high politics that I don't really understand. And also, but this is about me, not them. I am physically incapable of not hearing Milfgaard. Milfgaard. But one of the things I think that they do that I really like within it is that I like how like magic is conceived of as being sort of limited, and like the limitations on magic I think are really I think that's really clever. And I like that a lot. So yeah, I mean, I definitely watch it all. It's just kind of like I've got to rewatch it because I got so scrambled by it and I never really unscrambled myself. But still, it's a bit of fun. Like it, don't I?
I'll get around to checking it out eventually and being like, damn, Henry Cavill is ripped as fuck. Good for him. Good for him. Yep. So, moving on from The Witcher to another somewhat controversial entry here, Kingdom Come Deliverance, a first-person open-world RPG published in 2018 by Warhorse Studios. And hey, speaking of controversial, it's Kingdom Come Deliverance. The game was intended to be historically accurate across the board. It was marketed as such, though it doesn't always hit the mark. To give an indication of this level of commitment, the game is specifically set in a real time and place under real leaders with actual historical events going on around the player. A rarity for these action games. Some, as you'll see, like with Assassin's Creed, borrow, you know, like a setting, but they depart from it vastly. And others, you know, they keep the motifs, but they just make up a fictional setting. Well, Kingdom Come Deliverance actually takes place in Bohemia in 1403 under the nominal rule of King Wenceslas IV, though just a few months before the game begins, Wenceslas is captured by his half-brother Sigismund, the King of Hungary. Sigismund then begins pillaging the lands of Bohemia, punishing Wenceslas's allies. All of this is historically accurate as far as I know. Yeah. So the player is Henry, a young blacksmith's apprentice whose entire village is cut down by Cuman mercenaries acting on the orders of Sigismund. Henry must hack and pillage and trebuchet his way to revenge, as well as taking his rightful place as the bastard son of royalty. The weaponry, fighting styles, and garb are extremely authentic, according to the historians they had on the game and the battle nerds who served as consultants. Unfortunately, you know, there's a catch here. Much like The Witcher 3, Kingdom Come Deliverance was criticized for having an all-white cast of characters with no diversity to speak of. In this case, it was even more apparent because it takes place in Bohemia, a land very near to the Ottoman Empire, and the fact that the Cumans were a real mercenary force who were pulled from the Turkic Cuman peoples. Definitely would probably see some non-white people there. Though, of course, if you just had the Cumans being the only non-white people, that wouldn't have looked good either, because they're the barbaric invading force. Yeah. But at the same time, just don't put yourself in this fucking position. You won't have this problem. So they did that. Also, the game's director is a reactionary Gamergate truther, but I'm going to be completely honest with you. If you start throwing out games because their directors are reactionary idiots, you're never going to play one, much like with movies and directors and so on. And from what I can tell, what I've read, the game is very accurate. It has period accurate weaponry and fighting styles and everything like that. But, you know, they also departed from the actual culture that was going on in Bohemia at the time, because Bohemia is portrayed as a very, very repressed place culturally at the time, and these peasants are, you know, downtrodden, you know, the stereotypical idea, when, as Eleanor I'm sure can elucidate very well, at the time Bohemia was a hotbed of, you know, religious heterodoxy and culture, you know, and it was an exporter of culture to the world. Prague, you know, has almost always been an exporter of culture to the rest of the world. So, yeah.
This one really drives me crazy, because obviously this should be my shit, right? Like, there should be no other video game that I'm more interested in and want to play more. But the politics are fucked, man. Like, the vibe is off. The vibe is off. And, you know, exactly as you say, Luke. So it's the same thing as with the Witcher game, where it's like, it makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah.
For Bohemia to be, like, all white at the time. It's like, absolutely not. Like, are you joking? You know, it's just... You know, the fight between Venceslas and Sigismund is, you know, one for, like, the Holy Roman throne, like, for the Holy Roman Imperial throne. We've just got out of the reign of Charles IV, making Prague the most important place in Europe. You know, they are rich as hell because they've got the silver mines of Kutnaura. We are right in the middle of kind of like converting to Hussitism. You know, it's all popping off. You know, one of the major reasons that Sigismund is like seizing land from Venceslas is that he is seen as being too lenient towards Hussites. Right? It's because he's kind of like, I don't know, like, all the Czech people seem real, real intent on this. So, you know, like, the only reason that Hus kind of like went off and got killed at Constance is because there was a guarantee of safety, like, on the part of, like, Venceslas. It's like, yeah, absolutely, man. They promised they wouldn't kill you. But then also Hus really wanted to get killed. So, like, you know, we don't need to get into it. So,
and Sigismund wanted to kill him. So, everybody wanted the same thing except for Venceslas. Like, no, don't die.
Yeah, exactly. Because he knew it was going to get him in fucking trouble in Prague, basically.
Yeah.
Because everybody loved this shit. Yeah, it's really... It sucks because it's like there are all these things, this attention to detail, like the attention to the weaponry, like the attention to what's going on in terms of, you know, invading forces, like getting these people in. So all that bits are accurate. And so this is what I always say, is that actually it's much more damaging to have a game like that purports to be perfectly accurate when it's clearly not, like when it's showing like peasants as like not knowing anything and being like completely cut off from this huge religious movement, which peasants were like really bound up with. You know, and a lot of the time the peasants were much more radical than, for example, so like the Prague Hussites in general are considered to be more conservative, you know, because they're the ones with all the money. So, you know, like it's, and the trouble is that people do use video games to learn medieval history, which I don't have a problem with, right? Because I'd rather them learn some medieval history than absolutely nothing at all. But the trouble is, if you go around saying, well, here we go, Kingdom Come Deliverance, this is an accurate, this is an accurate portrayal of what was going on in 15th century Bohemia, then like that makes my life so much harder, right? Because then I've got to fucking like argue about how, no, it isn't. Oh my God, you know? And, you know, really, I'm happy that people do know about 15th century Bohemia at all, one of the most important places on the fucking planet at that time. But it's annoying to me that it persists in having these myths, which make it, again, seem like a backwater. It's like, why don't you just, like, oh, like, there's a reason that you set your game here, and it's because there's nowhere that's more important. And, but, you know, this is a problem with, you know, a thing that we have difficulties with in Czech culture is kind of like our view of quote-unquote outsiders
being erased from history.
Like, so it's like we get erased from history a lot, and then because a lot of us, not all of us, mind, you know, there's plenty of people just like me in the Czech Republic, because a lot of us kind of feel a particular way though about foreigners. You get inaccurate representations of our own history, which then back up that point of view, which is it's really disappointing because it's a problem for all of us, right? You know, like when I'm spending all of my time being like, please pay attention to Czechs, then like to have people be like, I don't know, like we kind of sucked and we're poor. It's like, are you, you know?
Yeah. I think the thing with this one that like is kind of annoying to me is just like a person who, you know, obviously not a historian, et cetera, et cetera. But like, it's little things that you could change very easily. You could change the skin tone, like I said, with The Witcher, of a few NPCs, a few background characters, make the Cumin mostly non-white, and you have solved this problem. You do not have to answer this question anymore because you have solved it. And then with the other stuff, you can still show how shitty and awful the lives of peasants are and how brutalized they become when people are playing power politics over them, which is 100% true and something that happened across the board to peasants everywhere in the world, not just in Europe. And also like throw in like some lines in there about how, you know, some guy like teaching like Hus like in the background, like it doesn't have to be something where like everyone is like, have you heard of Jan Hus, have you heard, you know, like it can be like a couple of street preachers or, you know, however
and that'd be cool.
And then you solve a lot of that problem instead of being like, look at these fucking mud cake ticks. You know, like, I mean, you know, they probably were mud cake ticks, but that's not the point.
Yeah, like, I mean, they incredibly were, like, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, sure, like they're like the peasantry are out in the countryside for sure. But that was like one of the cool things about the Hussite movement is that it really brought these people in and, you know, inspired them to wage war on the Holy Roman Empire and win.
Yeah, one of the great things about the spread of Christianity and of religions religions that seek to break the chains of slaves based on their teachings is the way that they capture the minds and the imaginations and the hearts of peasants and give them the idea of a better life. Even if it's a better life just in heaven, it's still better than this. And, you know, and that's something, you know, we could talk about it later, you know, like Martin Luther didn't understand. He was like, yeah, look at this, it's going to free you from your chains. And people were like, oh shit, yeah, we should rise up. And he's like, oh, I didn't mean like that. I meant metaphorical chains. No. You still have to be a peasant. You know, it's like they, you know, anyway, yeah, that's Kingdom Come Deliverance. I have heard good things about the gameplay, but, you know, don't back yourself into that corner with it's going to be historically accurate and then forget about what's going on there with the importance of, you know, of Prague and of culture and religion at the time. Yeah. So next up is a game that I actually hadn't heard of. I only found out while researching for this. It's called A Plague Tale: Innocence, and is a third-person action-adventure stealth game published in May 2019 by Focus Home Interactive. It does have a sequel releasing in just over a month. Whereas Kingdom Come Deliverance aimed for almost total historic accuracy as they saw it, down to the names of real life leaders and such. A Plague Tale goes for the historical feel while using real events as the background, but then diverting away from it later. The player is a 15-year-old French girl who must protect her sickly younger brother from French Inquisition troops and plague rats during the Hundred Years' War. So many plague rats appear on screen, as many as 5,000 at one time, which is a lot of assets for a video game. If you are not familiar, that is a lot. I don't know if that number of rats is historically accurate, but it is historically gross regardless. The game does move into the fantastical with magical elixirs and latent superpowers and more, but it uses the medieval setting of the plague of 100 years war to do so, and I actually watched some gameplay of it. It's very creepy, very moody. Don't know how realistic it is, but it looks very, you know, the buildings look good. It's, you know, soldiers are traipsing every, it's very, very dramatic. It's very,
yeah, I mean, okay, that I love the premise of this. Yeah. But also, no, 5,000 rats is not historically accurate. Yeah. Like, and also, I just want to point out, like, I suppose this is one of the things that always gets me, is that people blame the rats, but it's not the rats, it's the fleas.
It's the fleas.
Like, yeah. I don't understand, like, there's this really interesting thing where everyone is like, oh yeah, because of the rats, and I'm like, it's not the rat, it's not like you come into contact with a rat and then you get fleas, like, plague. You come into contact with a flea and then you get plague. Right? Yeah. So I don't really understand why there's this kind of like disconnect there. And it's something that I complain about all the time, because I'm like a hashtag the rats did nothing wrong. Like, I'm a rat truther.
I think it's probably because you can see the rats, can't really see the fleas with the naked eye. So I mean, that would be my guess. But no, you're right. They, you know, it's the fleas that are the problem. But in a video game, you know, you can't really be like, dodge the fleas. You're like, where are they? Fuck, I don't know what's going on.
It's an interesting one too, because I guess it's also supposing that that the 15-year-old girl knows where plague's coming from.
I think it's like at the breakout, so I think her, and there's like some background, like her mom is like a secret alchemist or something like
that. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
So she's like, they're like trying to develop a cure for whatever weird disease the son has, you know, the younger brother has. And it's, you know, so like, you know, it's obviously fantastical in ways like that. But like the game is very specific. Like, it's like rats are coming. You have to avoid, you know, you have to avoid.
Oh, you have to avoid. OK, you know, yeah. So or whatever. It's interesting because it's like, I suppose it's possible that you could just be like, well, you could build a game. I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Like, sorry to any of my friends at Paradox who will be yelling at this and being like, no, you can't. But, like, maybe you could build a game where it's sort of like, oh, well, you need to avoid the rats, but, like, the character itself doesn't see that as, like, a, you know, like, they're avoiding rats to avoid rats, right? Which most of us do.
Yeah.
As opposed to kind of, like, avoid rats because they will give your sickly brother the plague. I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It does make sense, and I couldn't tell from what little I watched of it, but
though. I still kind of like it. I'm sort of into this.
I think that I might kind of know what you're saying, because she doesn't know what the disease is. They call it the bite. Like, you know, they gave it like an, you know, like a zombie nickname or whatever. But like, they're like, something bad happens when you get bit, when you're around these rats. So you avoid the, you know.
Oh, okay. Like, all right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I mean, yeah. And of course it's ahistorical that they would know that, but, but you know, whatever. Fine.
It's a video game. You have to, if you're just like, I have to avoid getting the plague, and the game was like, well, you don't know anything.
And the game is like, okay, make sure your humors are balanced. You can carry a pomander. Perhaps leave the city, you know, things of this nature.
Get rid of excess yellow bile.
It'll be all like, don't let foreigners poison your well, you know.
Yeah, look out for shady foreigners. Oh no, the English struck again.
Yeah, it'll 100% be all like yell at your neighbor who's dressed too slutty, right? Like,
yep,
that'd be a good game though.
A mini game, like a mini game for that. Like, harangue your neighbor for being unchaste. That'd be great. Yeah, A Plague Tale. Looks pretty cool. Check it out if it's if you're into that sort of thing. Stealth games aren't normally my favorite, but you know, to each their own anyway. Speaking of stealth, speaking of insanely weird stealth games, the Assassin's Creed series, third person action adventure stealth games, published by Ubisoft. The most recent release, it was Assassin's Creed Valhalla in 2021. We can only ignore Assassin's Creed for so long. The long-running series focuses on a, yeah, just get ready for it, an ongoing centuries-old shadow war between the Templars, who are autocratic, and the Assassins, who want a free world. The player takes the role of Desmond, the last scion of the Assassins of old. Using a modified virtual reality system, the modern-day Assassins tap into the epigenetic memories from Desmond's ancestors, who aided the Assassins against the Templars in past ages. Eventually, other protagonists are included alongside Desmond, but most of the games play out in the past. The two medieval era games, the original Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed Valhalla, each lean heavily into those settings, though they do play a bit fast and loose with everything, as you might expect, given the whole epigenetic memory machine. The original Assassin's Creed takes place during the Third Crusade under the leadership of Saladin, which we have discussed in the past, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla takes place during the Viking invasions of England in the 9th century. So, like, these games are basically when you go back into the past, you like blend into crowds, you try to assassinate Templars, you jump off of buildings that should be too tall for you to jump off of, and land in hay bales that save you somehow. Yeah, some people really like them. They are in some ways a lot of fun. There's too much fetch quest stuff for me, which is basically like go here and pick up this useless junk and bring it back to me. There's a bit too much of that for me in the games, and like you get stuck trying to be like, okay, I have to find all 50 of these flags that are just like randomly spread throughout the world, and you're just like, oh, okay, great, check that off my list. Like, that stuff kind of bothers me, you know, but they are kind of fun. You can kill the Pope in one of them, which, you know, that's pretty cool. You can fight one of the Borgia popes and kill him, which
Okay,
is
all right,
neat.
that's
Yeah.
fun, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's two, Assassin's Creed 2, which takes place in Renaissance Italy. Yeah. Yeah, so Eleanor, tell us about the long-running shadow war between the Assassins and the I can't even finish the sentence.
I
Yeah.
know, right? It's like, it don't work, no. Like,
No.
it's really interesting. I think I'm really interested in is popular depictions of the Knights Templar,
Yeah.
and how they're kind of like seen by people. And it's like, homie, they were just like a really rich and influential group of monks,
Nope.
like,
Nope.
you
They
know.
the Illuminati, Eleanor. Have you
Yeah.
seen this game? The
And
Illuminatus.
it's funny because it's like, so sometimes they're the Illuminati or sometimes they're the good ones, and it really
Yeah,
depends on
yeah,
who you
yeah.
ask. So like, and then so for example, like sometimes the church was gets blamed for bringing them down, when really it was the King of France, but you know, whatever. And the church was like, yeah, fine, whatever. Like these guys are annoying us. But it is quite, it's quite interesting to see things like that. So I'm like, in a word, no.
Yeah.
I know the most obviously about whatever's going on in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. You know, and you know, like spoiler alert, like not very accurate. Like you know, which is
Yeah.
much as one would assume from a series like this. But you know, for example, there's things like so for example, you can go to Bath in it, and it's like all the Roman architecture who's still extant,
Yeah.
and it's like no, that's just
Yeah.
no, that's not how it worked. So you know, like either it would have fallen down by then because you know time elapses, you know, like 300 years is a long time. Like more here in England, you know, by the time the fucking
Yeah.
Romans retreated or whatever. And also then people would like reuse bits of Roman masonry to make other things because that's smart.
Yep.
So people would be like, well, I'm having this for a house or whatever the fuck's like. So that's no. That's absolutely not gonna be. The other thing that's really weird about it is the way the weather works in England. Like they keep kind of treating it like it's Norway and it's not. Like Yorkshire is just like full of snow, and I'm like, buddy, this is the medieval warm period. Like, yeah. That's not going to be the thing. Also interesting, a commitment, like trying to get the their pagan priestesses, like a thing that gets talked a lot in medieval circles is that like the kind of Viking priestess is like titty out.
Let's go.
And it's like titty out in the middle of the snow, and it's like probably not, right? Like, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, mate, either it's like a really cold culture in the snow, or it's like titty out, right?
Yeah.
Like you need to kind of like make up your mind about that. But like you know, and there's just kind of like certain things where it's like they don't get farming right.
Mm.
You know, I'm not asking everybody to get farming right, but you know, like especially so this is kind of like before the invention of the three field system. Shout out
yep.
to the best invention of all time. But they'll be like harvesting crops in January, and it's like
no,
like especially not in the snow, right? Like, and winter wheat and crops like that do exist. Like, there are winter crops. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that there aren't, but like not if you don't have the three fucking field system. There isn't, homie.
Yeah.
So like no.
Yeah.
These are just kind of things that we know about because there's descriptions about these things. Like, right,
yeah.
We know, like, sagas have descriptions of what priestesses were, and, like, that ain't it, right? Like, you know, there are all these things that, like, you definitely know. So, like, you know, basically, whatever, though. Like, yeah. On the other hand, it's like, I think that we all kind of fucking know by the time we're playing Assassin's Creed that, like, the story yeah. is silly because, like, again, it's about, like, the Knights Templar wanting to, like, fight with a bunch yeah. of assassins, and that doesn't make any sense. So I think that we're already kind of, like, out the window with all of that. Although, I have it on good authority that the medieval Florence that they use, sorry, like early modern Florence that they use for the one that's kind of like where you can kill the Borgia Pope and everything,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty accurate. And like,
oh, nice.
And like I've known, so apparently it can still like help you navigate Florence now, like because they were really really careful with the street mapping there. So I think that's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I think that's a neat thing.
Yeah.
So you know, like yeah, shit, they got Vikings wrong. Like no. The Knights Templar are not like a secret order fighting with these guys, but like also, whatever.
Yep.
You know, like what you gonna yep. do, right? What are you gonna do?
Exactly. Exactly. So that's Assassin's Creed. Moving on, we got a couple more here. We finally get to the Elder Scrolls series, which are first-person RPG games published by Bethesda Softworks. The most recent release is, well, technically, the most recent release is an online multiplayer MMORPG, massively multiplayer online role-playing game. But the most recent release that most people know about is Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, which released in 2011. Most of the Elder Scrolls games borrow heavily from medievalist fantasy, but, you know, this is going to focus on Skyrim mostly because it's been ported to basically every system known to humanity and people, you know it. Skyrim is a lot.
Yeah.
It is at once an insanely ambitious RPG with a huge map filled with all sorts of fantasy goodness like dragons, dark elves, and sentient cat people.
Mm.
It's also a mess. The main story is a weird Nordic power fantasy where you're asked to pick between two shitty sides, but at least you learn the power of dragon shouts that allow the player to breathe ice or push bears off a mountain with a single shout, which was a lot of fun. I have a video of it if I remember. I'll link it from when I played where a bear was beating my ass and I was just like, ah, fuck. And I yelled and like screamed it off the side of a mountain. It just goes, pew. Good times. Also, you can build a nice little homestead with cool towers for sorcery and places for your family to live. But also the homestead is bugged. So sometimes a giant spawns outside the house and you get splattered as you walk out the front door. A little like a modern life, I guess. Ha 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 ha. Anyway, Skyrim relies heavily on Norse mythology, Viking culture, and paganism, of course, and features wizards, swords and shields, damsels, guilds, and, you know, other common medievalist tropes.
Yep.
It's, Skyrim.
Yeah.
It's available on everything, like, basically everything that you could possibly want to play it on, you could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's a lot, yeah. Yeah, that's Skyrim. Mount and Blade. It's a strategy action RPG series published by Tale Worlds Entertainment. The most recent release is Mount and Blade 2. Bannerlord, cool. which began early access in 2020 and is officially releasing next month. So Mountain Blade probably should have been in the strategy nerd section last week, but it also focuses a lot on combat, and I kind of forgot about it, so it's here. In these games, there's a certain subset of people who'd be very mad if they listened to this show. They'd be like, how could you?
Look, guys.
Yep. Okay. Yep. In these games, players tasked with building alliances, boosting their own faction, retaining bannermen, doing court intrigue, and other strategy game-style tasks, while also getting a lot of combat-focused elements, such as leading or defending sieges, and engaging in combat alongside the troops. The game is set in a fictional land that is being fought over by five factions, each of which are based on real empires or governments from the years 600 AD to 1100 AD. So like, you know, the Sassanids, the Byzantines, etc., etc. So it just takes medieval parts and, you know, puts them over a fictional map in order to give a new spin on things. The game also supposedly features realistic weaponry, battle styles, clothing, and buildings from that 600 to 1100 era. Yeah, so...
That's interesting, though. Like,
It's very detailed. A lot of work went into it from what I've seen. I've never played it, but I've watched other people play it. It's insanely detailed. And if you're one of those people who's like, I like strategy games, but I need a little bit more action, Mountain Blade really is.
Yeah, because like, to me, that's like, I tend to skew more strategy game, but I'm like, oh, but there's also fighting, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that's cool. That's actually one for me to check out, I think, because that could be... Yeah, that could definitely be something that I was into.
And then we got two more here. The first is For Honor, which is a third-person action game published by Ubisoft in 2017. And the premise of the game is very simple. Have you ever wanted to see what it would be like if knights, Vikings, samurai, and ancient Chinese warriors fought one another?
Nice.
Well, that's what For Honor gives you. The player controls the leader of these... four factions. I think there are a couple of more as well, and they do battle in various fantasy settings with the other groups. A samurai dueling a knight, you know, cool. That's pretty much the game. Cool premise, a little light on everything else, it seems, but people did seem to like it back when it came out. Yeah, pretty cool. Finally, the one for my heart, we have the Dark Souls series, Demon Souls, and Elden Ring. These are third-person action RPG games published by FromSoft Entertainment. The most recent release is Elden Ring, which is from March 2022. Lastly and finally, my favorite entry on the list, the Soulsborne games. And if you're familiar with these, there's also Bloodborne and Sekiro, but those actually, Bloodborne is more of a Lovecraftian, steampunk kind of thing. And Sekiro actually takes place in, a real period in Japanese history, although with a bunch of fantasy elements. That's from the early modern era. So yeah, these games are difficult. They're lore dense and they're insanely detailed. They borrow heavily from medievalist fantasies like the manga Berserk, The Lord of the Rings, Conan the Barbarian, Dungeons and Dragons, and A Song of Ice and Fire, especially in Elden Ring's case because it was co-created alongside George R.R. Martin. And yeah, these games feature, you know, anything you could possibly want in terms of fantastical medievalism. Various dragons, knightly orders, holy orders, crusades, magnificent castles, wizards, witches, meddlesome gods, chosen bloodlines, incest, rebuses, swords, shields, maidens, being maidenless, and more. Yeah, these games are
awesome. I like literally do not play them because I know I would just be lost. Like, you just wouldn't see me for weeks. I'd be like, bye, bitches. Like, and that would be it. And also, like, I just worry about having been too out of gaming, like, not because I know how hard these are. Like my friends who are regular gamers are like, yeah, they're really, really tricky. And I'm like, well, what hope hath I? You know, like, someone who hasn't been gaming. But it looks so cool. And I absolutely, like, I've definitely watched my friends who've streamed it. And I always love seeing people's, like, little clips of that and stuff. Because it's, because it whips, man. It goes so hard.
Yeah, they're awesome. There are very few games that give me the sense, like, the games really do give you, like, a weird sense of accomplishment when you beat them. Or when you even beat certain bosses. Because, like... a lot of stuff is like stacked against you, so you either have to like figure out a strategy or like get some kind of items that help out or whatever. And it's you know, I like working through that puzzle and doing it and going through like that. They're just, yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah, we should definitely, I should play Elden Ring on a stream and you should come on.
Yeah, talk that'd about be fun.
Because that'd be fun as hell.
I'll definitely do that, yeah.
And those, yeah. Elden Ring is just like, it's completely open world and there's this huge map and you can just go and look at all this shit. And it's like, all the other games in the series are very linear in the sense of like, you have a path you can go down. Sometimes it branches, but you're still going down the same path. You can't just go explore stuff. And with Elden Ring, you can. And like, yeah, it's just, it's great. Like, you know, there's like a very knight errant feel to Elden Ring where you're just out there, like, you know, kicking ass and, you know, everything's hostile to you, so you just kind of kick everything's ass. But you know, that's pretty much it. Yeah And so that's our tour through medievalism in video games. We've covered a lot. Like we said last time, we covered the strategy games. This time a little bit more on the action side of things. And yeah, these are most of these games are, like I said the last time, available for console and PC. Yeah, a few of them may be PC exclusives, like Mountain Blade. But other than that, yeah, you can check them out, pick them up a lot of places. And yeah, this, you know, it just kind of a high level overview of everything here. We couldn't really dig down into every single game, but we did definitely want to cover, like, especially the Witcher stuff and the Kingdom Come Deliverance, and, you know, just kind of look at that kind of stuff as well as the rest of this. So yeah, next time, not sure what we're going to talk about yet, but we will figure it out. Before then, Eleanor, where can people find your work?
Yeah, check out my blog, going-medieval.com. I'm going to write something about polychromian statues this week, I think. Mostly because I saw a bunch of cool polychromian statues while I was on holiday. And you can find me on Twitter at going-medieval. You can pre-order my new book, The Once and Future Sex, at anywhere. Like, I mean, try to get it from a local bookstore. They'll do it for you. They'll absolutely do it. Like, don't give your money to Jeff Bezos. Give it to someone else. But do pre-order it, because it makes my life a lot easier. Thank you.
That's awesome. Yep. And my name is Luke. You can find me at Luke is Amazing on Twitter. Or you can check out the podcast I used to do. It's a Star Wars podcast called A People's History of the Old Republic. And you can find it wherever you're listening to this right now. But again, thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.